Hey now, and welcome to the City Off Campus podcast with your two favorite hosts, Sammy Sommerfeld and Jack McFarland. We've got a special guest today. We've got former Iowa Hawkeye football player and current motivational speaker and entrepreneur, Keith Hunter, on show today. How's everything with you, Keith?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me, and it's a pleasure of mine, especially when it comes to the University of Iowa.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. My first question for you is actually in reference to your TED Talk. And you talked about at the beginning of the TED Talk about how other programs recruited you. So I was wondering if you could talk about your recruitment journey and what other schools were after you, being a guy from the Northeast, and why you made the decision to go to Iowa.
Well, I was recruited by Purdue and Pitt and Syracuse and Iowa, and every summer I went to Penn State football camp. But five guys from my high school went to the University of Iowa. And you remember Andre Tippett, Hall of Famer, and Norman Granger, who played for the Dallas Cowboys, self with the Cleveland Browns, and we had two other guys before that. And so all of us went to the University of Iowa and decided to help turn that program around and leave a legacy. And I don't know if you guys remember, y'all are too young, but Iowa didn't have a winning season for 21 years before we decided to go there. And then we helped turn the program around, and I went to four bowl games in a row.
You brought up Andre Tippett. So being a guy who literally played alongside him, you know, as a young kid all the way through college and then watching him go on to the pros, what was it like having a guy like that alongside you to push each other and train and work harder and kind of have goals that were aligned?
Well, the tradition really started at my high school. We had a winning tradition, and believe it or not, Andre Tippett was not the best player on our team. In fact, he wasn't even the best defensive end on our team. But, you know, we all was a little lucky and got an opportunity to get out. But to see his growth and see what he turned into once he got to the University of Iowa was incredible. And, you know, we used to talk all the time, but, you know, he's a big guy, and he had the right coaching staff and the right motivation to keep going. I mean, I don't even know if he thought that big himself, but after being at Iowa and seeing what we can do and listening to the motivational speeches that Hayden Fry gave, it would make anybody, you know, move to that level.
You talk a little about Hayden Fry right there. Talk a little about that coaching staff as a whole and how they impacted your entire team and the program for those 4 years while you were there.
Well, those guys were totally incredible. You know, Hayden Fry's mentality was he didn't want an assistant coach just to be an assistant coach. He was looking for assistant coaches who wanted to be head coaches, because Hayden Fry coached his coaches. And then he would let us communicate with him, which was great, you know. But the coaching staff speaks for itself, as you can see what those guys did. And Bobby Stoops was a part of that. But me and Bobby Stoops played in the same secondary together at Iowa. So, you know, he was a great guy, and then he became a coach, and me and him really studied under Bill Brazier, who was the defensive coordinator there, who was a brilliant, should have been a head coach a long time ago. He just didn't want to do that, I guess, and he wanted to stay with his friend Hayden Fry, and they turned the thing around real quick, and we enjoyed the whole time with them.
I'm going to go back to the coaching staff stuff for a second on how that's impacted you. But I wanted to ask you, I want to reference your TED Talk where you talk about getting your mind and body right, especially to play at a high level. You talked about playing in front of 100,000 fans. So right. How did you prepare yourself to get your mind and body right and able to perform at a high level in Kinnick and in all these Big Ten stadiums where you played?
Well, I don't know if anybody shared that with you, but for instance, the 105,000 came from playing at Michigan, when we played Michigan. So what Hayden Fry used to do is he would play a loudspeaker in our practice, real loud. I mean, where you can't even hear yourself. So that alone prepared you mentally for playing in front of 105,000 people. And I just remember when I did play in front of those people that I never really saw those people. I never really paid any attention to them. And that was the difference in the psychiatry part of what Hayden Fry brought to the program, of how to make somebody think about something else and concentrate on what you're doing instead of focusing on the crowd. So that's how we was able to do that. But getting your mind ready, I mean, you come in as a freshman and you think you're ready to play and you can get out there and do your thing, you know, because you believe that you're this athlete. But, you know, it takes a while to get used to that, not only to the crowd noise, but to understand and stay focused and stay locked in on what is going on the football field and the down and distance and everything that comes along with that. So, you know, it took me a while, you know, even though I played as a sophomore and I enjoyed my 4 years at Iowa. And so, you know, but it takes a while to get used to that and the whole focus thing, you know, and then having fun on top of that.
Getting coached up by a guy like Hayden Fry and, you know, the coaching staff that you mentioned earlier, what type of leadership skills have you taken later on in your life when you've led a life of being an entrepreneur, a businessman? What types of skills have you learned from coaches like that out, you know, that you've been able to apply to your life outside of football?
Well, when you are on a team and you come into a program that hasn't won in 21 years, you would think that the morale is really down, for one, right? And then two, we got the opportunity, and this is what's great about being around the staff that we was, and Hayden Fry and the men that he chose to be on his coaching staff. The main thing became how to build a championship culture. Right? So that's a whole nother aspect of the game. So when you have somebody at the bottom and starting to make them to believe that they can do something that they never done, and all those 21 years before them, those guys couldn't get it done, right? So you have to believe in the system. It's called a buy-in program. And once you start learning about the buy-in program, and following, believing, and watching film, because those guys put on their pants just like we do, right? They're no different than we do, but than we are. But on the football field, you know, you have to produce. But it doesn't only happen on the field. It happens in a workout. It happens in the locker room. It happens among your team. It even happens before you even get out of the bed. Like I said before, that you got to be prepared, totally prepared. But to build a championship culture, and this is how tough it is, right? You're spending most of your time. I'm a college football coach, and I've interviewed for many head coaching jobs, right? So to explain to administration, not only are you talking to the football team, but now you're talking to the faculty and you're talking to the student body. But you're not spending that much time with the student body and the faculty. So how do you get the outside people to start believing in your system to follow the whole championship? Because that's what it takes.
You brought up being a football coach. So what got you into coaching? Where did that passion and love come from? And what are some of your favorite memories of being a coach in your career?
Well, you know, Bill Brazier was an excellent teacher, and then he the one that told me that I should be in the game. I should have actually stayed at Iowa and coached. But, you know, I went on and did my thing. I thought it would be best to start at high school, even though I thought I knew the game, and I would call him and talk to him. And then I coached at Montclair State, a Division III level. And then I coached at Fordham University, is 1AA. And then I went up to American International College as an assistant head coach. and a co-defensive coordinator. So, you know, the passion for the game. If you, you know, the way Coach Brager taught us and how we looked at it and watching films with him and really understanding the game and defenses, you're going to fall in love with the game. And I was already in love with the game. And so my passion, I think, showed of my teaching.
I have a quick question about specifically about your playing career. So back in 1984, you guys played Wisconsin at Kinnick, and it was on CBS, and you guys tied 10-10. How does that psychologically, because you've talked a lot about getting your mind right, how does that psychologically kind of throw you off going into the next week with a 10-10 tie? Like, what did you say to yourself going into the following week?
Well, I don't think it throws you off at all. I think you expect to win, right? But you'd rather come out as a tie than actually losing. And so that, I don't think that really affected us, only from the standpoint of game plan wise, we knew we could have done something better, right? And we know that we made a couple of mistakes and we should have won the game. So the key is just like golf, right? Once you finish the hole, you got to forget that hole. So the same thing about the game, right? Once you finish that week, you forget about that week, but that's why you watch in film to first see what your mistakes was and what you could have done better. And then the following week, you come out even stronger. That's the motivation.
Were there any games that you had tied to prior to this game ever in your career? Like, have you ever been in a football game where it's ended in a tie? Because I personally have not, and so that's why I bring it up.
Right. I really can't remember. I can't remember back that far, but I don't think so.
What is your favorite Iowa game day memory?
Well, mine was two of them. One was against all the two big boys. I was the most valuable player in among the team in the Michigan game. You know, I had a really interception, but I stepped out of balance. And then I had a lot of key tackles that stopped Michigan from scoring. So that was one. And then against Ohio State, you know, when Ohio State came to Iowa and it was on television, I think it was in 83.
It was on CBS. Yep.
And I ended up knocking Keith Byers out of the game when he had 100 yards the first quarter. And it was like, wow, I got to deal with this all day long. And so they ran a screen play, and the tackle was pulling to come get me because I was the cornerback on the left side. And I slipped past the tackle or guard. And then he caught the ball, and soon he turned around. I hit him right in his face. And then he was out. He hurt his leg or something, and he was out of the game the rest of the game. So I think that was a tremendous effort, not only by me, but by the whole defense, and we won that game.
I looked back into a couple of articles from back in the 80s, and your nickname back then was Keith Headhunter. Do you want to speak to that at all? I didn't get to see any of your games, so I'm curious to how you got that nickname.
Well, one, actually, I had two. But the number one was they used to call me the Whacker.
Okay.
The Whacker, right. So, or Keith, the Headhunter. So I was probably in the top two hardest hitting defensive backs in the Big Ten.
Who's number one if you weren't number one?
Oh, I don't know. I really don't remember, but, you know, I mean, you know, Ohio State has some guys that could really, really hit hard, and Michigan as well. So, you know, I just had the pride of I noticed that they didn't run my way that much and they didn't pass my way that much. So that came as respect. And, you know, I was there to play the game and I was having fun. I wasn't trying to hurt people on purpose, but, you know, people thought I was like a little Jack Tatum. If you remember, Jack Tatum used to knock people out in the game. And, you know, a couple of those things have happened, but, you know, not on purpose.
What's your favorite thing, or what do you love about the game of football, and what drew you to the game?
Well, I mean, you know, football is football, man, and it's a wonderful game. And because I coach the game, you know, my passion is even stronger now that I coach the game, or have coached the game. And so there's so many aspects to football. I was just talking to a young lady the other day who's writing a book for this college football coach on defense and offense. So she called me and asked me questions about the 4-3 defense. And even when I finished talking to her and all the aspects that come into that and how each level of play, each level of players, you know, contribute to a certain thing and why, it was amazing to me to hear me talk about it myself. And so it's like a chess game, correct? And so, you know, offenses come out and they want to dictate to the defense, right? And so it's your job to understand their tendencies and do the opposite, right? And to be able to shut that down. So there's fun with that, you know, but you got to stay in the game and you got to stay focused. And I just love the game, man. I can't understand it. People who don't love the game.
Did you ever play chess growing up? Because I've heard people make that analogy about football, and I've played chess before, and I can completely see that comparison.
I didn't play it a lot, but this guy taught me how to play it, and all of a sudden I was very good at it, because you have to learn how to think. But it's that, you know, strategy again of moving, or when to move and not to move. So you might get excited about something, but that's not the move to make. So that applies to football, right? So, you know, you got to know, you know, what the tendencies is, what the possibility is, and you got to know the how and the why, you know. So when I speak, that's one of the things that I help people understand.
So you talked to this lady on the phone about the 4-3 specifically. I'm going to ask you, what is your favorite feature of the 4-3 that you can't accomplish in other defenses?
Well, first of all, at Iowa, we ran a 5-2, right? So, but you can call it whatever you want to call it, right? So the offense can make you change from a 4-3 defense to a 3-3-4 defense, or 3-4 defense instead of a 4-3. So it depends, again, on what the down and distance is and what they're trying to do and what we're trying to do. But I love the 4-3 defense. When I coached at Montclair State, they was running a 4-4 defense. And I said, okay, if you're going to run a 4-4 defense, then your outside linebacker's got to be the best athlete on the field. So a lot of times I would take them out and run a nickel package or a dime patch of 5 defensive backs or 6 defensive backs. But a 4-3 defense, you could do so many things and show different looks, right? So I love pressure, right? I'm a defensive guy, right? I love pressure. So I can show pressure with almost the whole team almost lining up and then come out of that and play a 4-3 defense, or play a combination, a man on one side, zone on the other side. There's so many things that you can do. And that's what I love about the 4-3 defense.
After you finished up your Iowa career, you had a stint with the Browns. Can you tell us about your experience in the NFL?
Well, back then it was a little tough. You know, Cleveland wasn't a great town. And, you know, they wasn't a winning team either. Right.
Well, they're not anymore still. So.
Right. Well, you know, that's my team, man. You know what I mean? So, and I was there a little bit to see the building block, that culture change. And so if you remember in 86, I believe we played against the Denver Broncos, and that's when, you know, we went to the playoff. We could have went to the Super Bowl, but Beiner fumbled around the end zone, and they got the ball and scored again, so it was really tough. So, but I love the Cleveland Browns, you know. You know, I love any program that really is rebuilding. I think that they have the right people now. And they have the, people don't understand, it's a combination of things. Sometimes when, especially in the pros, when you have a owner who think he's bigger than the players, and then you find out that he's not. And so you got to have that right mix where the owners and the you know, from the top down, you know, got to have a relationship with the players that make the players want to play for you. Not only the coaches, but for the organization. And so that's where culture really comes into play when you're in the pros, you know, because, you know, you can have the greatest coach in the world, you can have the right system, and it still doesn't work out. So the Cleveland Browns is my team, and they're going to continue to be my team. They gave me an opportunity. You guys, again, was too young. At that same time when I was a free agent, there was a league out that's called the USFL.
I was going to ask you about this, yeah.
Yeah, and I was drafted in the sixth round by the USFL. So I could have went to the USFL first, which now that I look at it, I probably should have done that. But I was so, you know, tied up in the Cleveland Browns giving me the opportunity. I just thought that that opportunity would be better for me. But now that I look at it, I probably should have went. I would have played immediately. You know, I would have made a lot of money, not a lot of money, but some money. And then I would have got my feet wet, and then I could have went to the Cleveland Browns or wherever I was going.
I was
going to
ask just really quick about the USFL. What, like, just really quick, just talk me through, like, what went through your head when you had the NFL in one hand and then the USFL in other? And this is a decision that, you know, athletes nowadays will never have to make. There's really no decision between one or the other. It's NFL or bust. What went through your head? Like, what was that internal battle between doing what your heart wants and what your head thinks you should do?
Well, it wasn't a battle for me, and at all. Once, you know, when you're a kid and you think about playing in the NFL, that's where you want to be. And so I couldn't even think about anything else. And that league had just came out, and nobody really knew who the Oakland Invaders was who drafted me. But that's okay. I mean, you know, again, if I look at it, I would have done that. Just like a year ago, the XFL was playing, and some players had the opportunity to go there. So, you know, if you know you're not going to get drafted within those seven rounds, you know, I mean, come on, just take the opportunity that you get, right? Football is football. It, you know, it's just like you tell kids today, football is football. Wherever you at, they're going to find you, right? Don't worry about if it's a Division I team. Whoever want to give you a scholarship and give you the opportunity, I say take it.
Speaking of opportunity, after your playing career was over, you became a businessman and entrepreneur. And referencing your TED Talk again, I had to ask you about this. You discussed winning the day. So how do you win the day each day in business?
Well, it doesn't matter if it's a business or if it's life, right? So one of the examples is every year somebody makes a New Year resolution, right? And then if you check back with them in 6 months, they probably forgot what it was anyway. Instead of worrying about the whole year and trying to make all these plans when you already got too much stuff on your plate, I think anything, before you can be successful, you have to learn to win the day, right? And winning the day is I conquered the day before I even got out of bed, right? So whatever the things that I have to do, you know, and this is what's important, I believe, for student athletes, because they have so many things on their plate and they got to take care of, right? But if they get miss an exam or get a bad grade, you can't let that one thing affect you. And then now you come to practice, it's affecting you. And then it ultimately affects the whole team. So if you teach those players and your players how to win the day, and things are going to go bad, right? But you're not going to let them affect you the way you got to learn how to overcome them immediately. And I think that's the key. And so for me, you know, I think, you know, listening to Hayden Fry and all the speeches that he gave us and the motivational speeches that he gave us and me learning how to win the day, Bill Brazier used to say, get your priorities straight, right? That means win the day.
Yeah.
It was just said in a different way, right? So you know, that once somebody keeps saying things like that to you, you remember those things. And so I think that's why I was able to be successful in the many things that I chose to do. And I've been an entrepreneur longer than I've done anything else. And I've been very successful at that and had fun at it. You got to have fun. It's not all about money.
So what inspired you to become an entrepreneur?
Well, I just always wanted to do my own thing, you know, but you, to be able to do that, you have to be organized, right? You hear people say, I want to have my own business. I want to be this, but you got to be disciplined, right? You got to be disciplined. I learned how to be disciplined at the University of Iowa, you know, with all the things that was, I mean, when I was in high school, and then I got to Iowa and I was like, well, how do I supposed to do all of these things at one time? Right? Because nobody else have ever asked you to do that. But when you get there and you see other guys doing it and you see they got their priorities straight and you learn those things. And if you follow that same formula, right, in business, you will be successful.
So at your time at Iowa, you talk about learning that skill, kind of time management and being able to put your priorities in line and be focused. What skills as an athlete did you learn that you apply to business?
Well, I applied it all to business. You know, there's a saying in defense, right, that we learned in defense, and it's called formation recognition and strategy situation. Right. So we apply that on the field to formation, meaning what formation they came out in, what's the down and distance, and what defense do you attach to that based on us watching film. Right. Mm-hmm. So if you take formation recognition and strategy situation, it's the same thing in life. Right. So it's the strategy, it's figuring out what's the formation that's coming at you. What do you got to deal with today? What is the time of the year? Right. And then attach your defense, your attack mode against it. Right. So it's the same thing in life. Right. So
one of my final questions for you is how did, you know, there aren't too many times where you get to see a former Hawkeye do a TED Talk. So how did you get that opportunity and what was that experience like?
Well, you know, TED Talk is, some of them are local. So they're called TEDx, but they're part of TED Talk. And it's just the local people take care of it. So when I saw that in New Jersey, I actually wrote in to say, I want to be in it next year. And then I emailed the lady and she says, okay, when we are finished this one, we'll get in touch with you. An hour later, she emails me back and said, can you do it now? And I said, no, joking with her, right? I said, absolutely not, right? And I was joking with her, but she said a couple of people had dropped out and they needed, you know, a couple more people. So I said, absolutely, I'll do it. And what made me prepare, everybody for the TED Talk had 2 months to prepare, and I only 2 weeks. But because I write all the time, I already had all my material. Now, and even though you have all your material, you can't just take your material and then do a TED Talk. You gotta do a TED Talk their way. So they put you with people and they make sure your whole speech is the TED Talk way. and that it's going to have the power that it needs when you are on stage. So it's live, man. You on stage, it was 150 people. It's cameras in your face. They filming it, you know, to put it on YouTube. So there's no room for error. And so what happened was, it was really fun that 10 people were speaking that night, but all of their speeches were serious. So they put me in the middle and to break up the crowd and get them involved, you know, because mine were, you know, a little more fun. So I really, really enjoyed that.
Yeah. What inspired you to start doing motivational speaking and public speaking engagements?
Well, I used to speak anyway, you know, even when I was at Iowa and I would come home and people would ask me to speak and do Pop Warner award dinners and things like that. So I've been speaking for a long time. Plus, that was my major at the University of Iowa in communication. But I used to do golf clinics around the country, and I used to speak indoor before we even go outdoors. So, but my friends and the people that I know always said, man, you should be on a speaking circuit. But I said, at the time, I said I wasn't ready because I believe that your head got to be in the game. And until I got to that point, then I decide that's what I wanted to do. And so it's not as easy as it may look and what people think. But, you know, you got to be focused and you got to know how to move a crowd. And I think that's the excitement part of it is how to get somebody to sit on the edge of their seat. And so I enjoy doing that now. So being on a TED Talk is almost like being on American Idol. You know, everybody don't win, but all those people get an opportunity and all of these people come after you. And so it's been overwhelming. It's been a great year. I decided that I wasn't going to do everything. And I just done a couple of podcasts and webinars. And I have a book coming out in 2 months about athletics. My first one is called Vulnerable Measures. It's about me just a little bit. But I have some great people in it. I got Andre Tippett in it. I got Bobby Stoops in it. I got Norman Granger in it. So, you know, that's going to be great. And then my second book will be for women, talking about athletics. And that one will be called Shifting with Grace.
Well, my last question for you, and I really appreciate you taking the time, is what is advice that you'd give to current and future Hawkeyes?
Well, it's funny that you asked that. I have a surprise for you, and that is the University of Iowa is talking to my daughter, who's in the 12th grade in Ohio, for track.
Wow. And so
we just did a whole Zoom thing with the track coach, with her mother and I and her on the phone talking to the University of Iowa. She's going to go to a Division I school. Ohio State is after her. Michigan State is after her. She's really good in track, and so we're looking forward to that. So I will be visiting Iowa soon with her, actually. You know, the University of Iowa, I just saw something, and I wrote a post about it on the University of Iowa's thing about, I don't know if it was about the money or it was about something about the University of Iowa having the opportunity to be a student and all the programs that they have and things like that. And I wrote that if the student athletes knew that, and you should make sure that they know that, more of them will show up and attend the University of Iowa.
That's great. We really appreciate you coming on the podcast today. It's great to hear that, you know, you might have a second generation going to Iowa potentially.
Let me leave this to your audience, right? It's called Today is Always Here, right? So today is always here, yesterday is gone, and tomorrow never comes. Time offers opportunity, but demands a sense of urgency. Now is the time, this is the place, and you are the one.
I love that. That was awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. On that note, Jack, do you want to close out the show?
Yeah. All right, guys. You know where to find our accounts. We're on Twitter and Instagram as well. You know where our website is. Not the same time, definitely the same place. We will see you guys later.